With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to a very obviously somber Terrace podcast. As I'm joined, my name is Graham Phillips, and today I'm joined by Sean McGregan.
Hello there.
Where we will pick through the bones and the bits and pieces that are left of Scotland's Euro 2020 campaign and Euro 2021. Well, obviously, I mean, I don't know why I'm explaining this as if you've been living under a rock that Scotland were defeated 3-1 by Croatia last night. And we're out. So after doing all the tournament maths of figuring out, right, we need this and we need that, and then we need this. As it turns out, we just didn't win a game. So that kind of fucked us broadly.
I miss those heady days of cheering on, like, Denmark. Like, we just need Denmark to win that, and we just need Belgium to win that. Like, I really miss those times.
Yeah, when Denmark's centre-half strode forward and lashed one in from 40 yards, I just briefly once again thought, fuck it, we could win it. Well, if we win tomorrow after that goal, then that'll be brilliant. We can look back at that as the moment that everything began to turn in our favour. Turns out that didn't happen, but nonetheless, we're here once again. We've been eliminated from the group stages, and we scored two goals, and we got 1 point. So is that a success?
No. I'm at a low ebb, and as much as, I mean, I struggle to be nuanced at the best of times, even more so when I've watched an important Scotland game drunk and then try and talk about it with a hangover. What I would say is, I suppose, especially when you're one of the smaller nations or one of the weaker nations at a tournament, you need certain things. So you probably need to be clinical. You need to take your chances when they come along, and we didn't do that. You need a wee bit of luck. All teams do, but especially the smaller teams. I don't really feel we got that, and I don't think that was a massive facet necessarily, because you always need luck. But in terms of Tierney's injury, in terms of Ryan Jack's injury, which probably had an even bigger effect than we maybe thought at the time, in terms of Gilmour picking COVID before that last game, didn't really feel like we got much luck. I think a smaller team needs to punch above their weight, performance-wise. I didn't really think we'd done that either. Yes, at Wembley we probably did, but I feel we let ourselves down in the games that kind of bookended Wembley. And we probably need to tactically get a lot more right than we get wrong, and I don't think we've done that either. I think going into the Czech game, you looked at that team and you thought, I'm not so sure about that. What I would say in Steve Clarke's defence last night is that it looked like he got it wrong in hindsight, So when I seen the team, I thought, right, fair enough. I would have left the defence as it was. You maybe would have started Fleck, as he might be the kind of most like-for-like replacement for Gilmour, but I was fine with Armstrong. But aye, ultimately, it didn't work. And I suppose the concern is that we seem to be inflexible. So I think we all would have went 3-5-2. But and 3-5-2 seemed to be the this is how we squeeze in Robertson and Tierney. And that's absolutely fine. And none of us would have asked for a different formation beforehand, I don't think. But we now seem to stick with it, even when it doesn't seem to be working. Like, we haven't won that many games playing with a 3-5-2. And Clark doesn't seem to want to change it, even when it isn't working during a game. So that's my biggest concern after last night's match. We seem very inflexible.
I'd agree with that as well. And you could see as the game was going on, particularly the Croatians, more than anything else, even just looking at the names on the bit of paper that are sitting in front of you, you look at their three midfielders in Kovacic, Brozovic and Modric, and you look at it and go, if we give the ball away, it's been a long time before we get the ball back, regardless of what happens. And that's very much how it plays out. And I fully agree with you on the Jack injury as well and Gilmour missing as well. The third sort of prong to that is losing McTominay into central defence as well, which again, I understand we kind of have to do that. Hendry isn't ready or isn't quite right for it. I think we will return to Jack Hendry. I think Hendry feels like one of the Scotland internationals that will go through bits and pieces of form and we'll come back in and we'll go back out and come back in and go back out over the next 10 years. I don't think there's anything wrong with that particularly either. And you see why I'd always been a bit lost as to why we went with McTominay in defence. And then you see him carry, it was particularly an England game more than anything else, but him carrying the ball 30, 40 yards at a time and dragging us up the pitch, the same as Tierney does on the other side. There isn't another centre-half that can do that. And that's fine, that's okay. The way the system is set up to do that. The problem was with how we were set up in midfield last night was that either by design or by the sort of natural instinct of the players involved, having Armstrong and McGinn either side of McGregor in central midfield, Armstrong's drifting left and pushing up, McGinn's pushing right and pushing up, or drifting right and pushing up. And again, that worked very well in the England game, but it worked very well because we had Billy Gilmour in there as well. And Callum McGregor kind of flatters the deceiving of Scotland shot, and it's hard, unfair to say that perhaps given he was one of our best performers last night, I thought. But he's a much, much better player with Billy Gilmour playing beside him or behind him, yeah, one way or the other. And without Ryan Jack, without Gilmour, and with McTominay in defence, because he kind of has to be, I thought McGregor throughout the game was just really exposed. And that comes back to what you're saying tactically as well. There were points when it felt like he was one against three in there. And it wasn't just one against three, it was one against one exceptionally good player, one of the best midfielders in the world over the past 10 years. And Kovacic and Brozovic, who are also two very, very fine players as well. And it was asking him to cover an awful lot of ground. You're asking Tierney or McTominay to step out and do that, which takes a lot of bravery, but it then leaves space wide for Vlasic and Perisic in behind. It just didn't feel right. And I agree with you tactically. In this game, it wasn't the right thing to do. By the same token, the number of times over the past 10 years we've looked at Scotland teams that have changed dramatically for an opposition and gone, well, why don't we play our game? We tried to play our game, and for that, there is a degree of respect in that as well. I feel that across the first game and the last game, I just don't feel the team selection was right. As I said, in terms of how it was set up tactically, Armstrong wasn't the body in there. Whether the other one was Fleck, whether the other one was Turnbull, it needed somebody to be beside McGregor rather than wide left of him or wider right of him. There needed to be more bodies in that midfield to put more pressure on them. And that's ultimately when Modric scored, is because Armstrong doesn't have that natural instinct of a central midfielder to be closing down the player rather than pleasant closing down the ball. He was drawn to the ball because, of course he was, because that's inevitable. And that was the frustration there with that more than anything else.
I thought this was the game, even more than the Czech game, where our deficiencies were kind of laid bare and exposed. So as much as I like Shea Adams, as much as I like Lyndon Dykes, incidentally, we don't have a goal scorer. I think Adams is our best forward by a mile, but even he doesn't score a barrel of the goals. in the English Premiership. Maybe if he was playing for a better team, maybe he would do. I don't know. But he's still a best forward without necessarily being a natural goal scorer, whatever that expression means. Yeah. That was exposed last night. The fact that we didn't really have, like, did we have a defensive midfielder? We certainly didn't have any last night. And that worked against us. And then at the back, I suppose we badly missed. Like once Grant Hanley went off, who was obviously an absolute colossus, we're struggling at centre-half. Like, and we already knew that. But last night, so you had Scott McKenna, which I thought was a strange substitution, bearing in mind Cooper had started in the first game. But regardless, so we had McKenna, and the other three centre-halves were a left-back and a midfielder. And that's where we're really lacking. And if you want to be harsh, maybe even on the right. Like I love Stephen O'Donnell.
Yep.
And I thought his interview after the England game was fantastic. And I know Tony mentioned it previously, but like we're all very guilty of talking about players, and I suppose some of those comments, I'm not saying our comments, we'll get back to them, but O'Donnell is aware of what Scotland fans kind of think of him, I suppose, as a footballer. And I think most Scotland fans like him and think he has a value and a place in the squad, but they probably wouldn't start him. Yes, he was fantastic at Wembley. I still wouldn't start him for Scotland. Taking Wembley aside, wouldn't start him. I think we have better right backs available to us, and I think, aye, I mean, our kind of fluency and our attacking impetus generally comes down the left, and it would be good if we were able to change that. I mean, to be fair, Armstrong and O'Donnell, they combine quite well on the right hand side for their goal, I suppose. So maybe I'm doing them a disservice, but we need something crisper, we need something more fluid down that right hand side from an attacking sense. And aye, that was the kind of four areas where we ultimately lost it.
Yeah, it always feels kind of feast or famine with O'Donnell, and there seems to be no sort of middle ground in it in terms of the reaction to him more than anything else, the reaction to him after the England game. And I'm guilty of it as well, but it was probably a bit over the top for a guy who is, he's Motherwell's right back. And again, I keep feeling that if you pick Motherwell's right back, you end up with Motherwell's right back, regardless of whether it's Stephen O'Donnell or whoever else it's going to be. That's the kind of performance you're going to get with that. And again, I do agree with you as well. There's not a defensive midfielder on the squad that isn't either got COVID or playing in central defence as well. McGregor is a fine player, but he just doesn't quite fit that role. Jack, I think, and I felt this before the tournament, and I've felt this for a while. To me, Jack feels like one of the first names in the team sheet for Steve Clark. I think he looks at him and goes, yep, we have you in front of the defence. And it allows the defence to get forward. Allows McTominay and Tierney to go, because Jack will be there. Jack will be sensible. Going forward, Jack and Gilmour could be a very, very nice partnership in there as well. And in amongst all the negativity as well, and around kind of what I felt the squad, and I felt more than anything after the Czech game, when everyone got very upset about the team selection, there was a lot of chat about Steve Clark picks his mates. And like, you can't have it both ways. You can't have a delight at how obviously together the squad are, and the unity in which that brings, and the support that they give each other to make themselves better players, because that's how football teams work. If you are happy, you are playing with people that you respect and people that respect you, then you play better. It's the same as any other workplace. You can't have it both ways and be delighted that Clark's done that and instilled that mentality and instilled that sense of what the importance of being a Scotland player is, and then expect them to be ruthless as well. And then you get to the Czech game and go, right, Dykes, you're out. O'Donnell, you're out. You're binned, because actually we've just got better players now, because that's not how that... You can't have delight at the unity and a desire for them to be ruthless. To me, it just doesn't work like that, and I don't think Clark works like that either. He's going to look after these guys and support these guys. I think at the end of this tournament, we will be looking to move on. I think that's an entirely fair way to look at it as well. And I imagine that's how Clark looks at it as well, in terms of, you guys got us here. We respect that. We're delighted by that. You still have a place in the squad. But we now have a generation of guys coming through. We have four or five guys in this team who you look at and go, well, that's the next decade of Scotland internationals. You look at the midfield and you have ideally a midfield which features Gilmour, McTominay, Turnbull. Jack's a little bit older, obviously. McGregor's a little bit older. McGinn's a little bit older. You have Patterson at right back. You have another 5 or 6 years minimum of Robertson and Tierney, ideally, as well. And that's, it's the nucleus of a very decent team. And it's not even just a case of, this is going to sound absolutely daft as well, but I do kind of feel that qualification to the Euros has been a bit of a distraction for Scotland more than anything else. It all felt a bit like it was dropped on Clark, even though obviously this is what he wants and this is what he wants to get us there and have us involved in it. It looks as much as building experience at this point for us. It does feel, it has felt like a bit of a distraction. You felt that in the Nations League after we qualified as well. It all felt a bit like after the Lord Mayor's show, when in reality, if Clark had had 2 years to build a squad, then I think the teams that had turned out at the Euros, if the Euros were in 2 years' time, it would be a different team. It would be a different way of looking at it. And I do think that he is, it doesn't feel like a short-term thing. It feels like a longer-term project for him in terms of building the squad and building the team. Not only, he's done the bit of bringing everyone together and creating a system. He solved a lot of problems as well in terms of how do you fit in Robertson and Tierney. Well, this is how you fit in Robertson and Tierney. We have two genuine world-class quality players in there. And it doesn't feel like the way in which Michael O'Neill built Northern Ireland, which again, similar, is very impressive. And you make the very best of having 11 guys that will do whatever the fuck you tell them. Well, 10 guys that will do whatever the fuck you tell them, and Kyle Lafferty, who will do whatever he wants. But you've got, it's not just a case of building a team that will get results. We have the opportunity here to build what is actually a good football team, a good collection of players. And that's what, I mean, it's the first time, looking back to the England game as well, it's the first time in my lifetime that you look back and you look at their squad, you look at the England squad, and you look at our squad and go, there's two or three of our players that would get a game for England. There are another couple who would comfortably be in the squad. That's never really happened in my lifetime.
I don't disagree with you. I think to take a glass half empty approach, I suppose my concern about Steve Clark and the Scotland team is, he's been in charge for a wee while now.
Yep.
And there hasn't been too many games where I've thought to myself, we've played really well there. So the England game, the Serbia game, the Holland friendly, there's probably been another game in there somewhere. But in general, we haven't played that well. We've kind of, and in terms of the World Cup group so far, the draw against Israel, I wasn't that impressed with us against Austria. I appreciate what you're saying, and that, yes, it feels like we have a much better squad and a much better, in fact, not even just a much better team, a much better squad, a squad of players that are capable. And I really like Steve Clark, and under no circumstances am I advocating that we should be considering his position, because I don't think that at all. But I do find myself getting more and more concerned that with every passing game, we seem to be flattened to deceive.
Yeah.
Like, this has been, without trying to be too knee-jerk, this has been a pretty poor performance at this tournament.
Yeah. And that is all absolutely true as well. And I don't disagree with that at all. I think what I'm trying to get at is the games that come on from now, I would expect us to kick on. I would expect us to kick on from this. And as I say, it has all, the way in which it was delayed for a year as well, and everything has been sort of kicked down the road for a little bit, it has felt like a very lengthy distraction from what is actually possibly a much more realistic target for Scotland in terms of getting to the World Cup in Qatar in 2022. And that's the one I would expect us to go to, and that was the one that's what I expect this team to do better. I mean, inevitably, I'm going to be fucking hideously disappointed. But when Clark takes over, you're looking at him, if you look at it in basis, well, you're looking at 2 or 3 years down the line in order to bring the squad together and develop it and start putting together a system and the way we're going to play. 2022 felt like a much more realistic target at the time. Going to the Euros is a bonus in the meantime. I expect this to be much better. I think there will be a bit of a changeover. I think Patterson coming on with the last 10, 15 minutes to go, he needs to play games. As much as you can make as much noise about Nathan Patterson as you like, but if he is not playing 90 minutes week in, week out, if he is not playing 90 minutes at all, you can't pick him. It's for me, you pick guys that play games of football. He can be good, bad, or indifferent for Scotland, but if he's not playing week in, week out, then he's not going to be the guy for us.
Yes, I agree. Again, I agree with that to a degree. But then you see somebody like Yarmolenko for Ukraine. I don't know how many games he played for West Ham that season that finished there. He's barely played the last 2 years. But for Ukraine, he's looked absolutely special. I think Patterson probably, he has impressed enough for Rangers to get minutes in the coming season. But as you say, if he is going to be sitting on the bench for Rangers for the foreseeable, then it isn't the ideal.
Yeah. Let's do solely glass half full going forward. What positives are you going to take from it, Sean? Obviously, I mean, I think somebody like Grant Hanley throughout his Scotland career has been kind of not, he's not someone that thrills people when he's in the squad. Not someone that thrills people. However, I struggle to think of many Scotland centre-half performances more impressive than his at Wembley. He was very good. McGregor, I kind of feel, you know, I think there's now a greater understanding in terms of the role that he can play for Scotland. Robertson and Tierney makes sense and it works. Adams, again, I think had we another year with Adams playing games for Scotland, I think we would have got more out of him. It all felt a bit sort of tacked on at the end. And he was absolutely, it was the right thing to do to call him up because he's better than any of our other centre forward options. Yep. But it doesn't feel, it all felt a bit rushed and a bit hurried. It's like waking up on a Saturday morning and deciding you're going to paint your house. Going to B&Q, just buying something and painting it because it's there. And then about 3 weeks later, you look at it and go, what the fuck have I done that for?
Why have I painted my house green?
Yeah, why did I should have spent a bit of time and thought about this a little bit more and tried to figure out. I need a plan here. I can't just do stuff. It all just felt a bit rushed for me as well. But and then, as you say, Gilmour and Patterson are going to be the guys in the Scotland team, you would imagine, for the next decade.
Aye. No, you're right. In terms of glass half full, what can I take for the tournament in terms of positives? The fact that I have been banging the Grant Hanley drum for 10 years since he made his Scotland debut, and at last, yes, I may have been saying it out of devilment, but at last I've been proven to be correct. His performance at Wembley, he was a colossus. Now, who else have we got at the back? Tierney, great. Robertson, great. Patterson, potentially very good. Defensively, we seem pretty sound in there. If you want to go into the middle of the park, Gilmour could be a genuinely fantastic player and a powerhouse for us for the next at least 10 years. So right away, we've got something to hang our hat on in there. I think Shea Adams is a decent striker, but we probably need... Ultimately, I think that's now where, for a while there, we're going about how we really needed a centre-half. I think midfield, Gilmour, we've already mentioned Jack, McTominay in there. You know something? We might be set in there as well. If we can just find a striker somewhere in the world that has a Scottish granny, then we might actually be hunky-dory.
What a wonderfully positive way to look at it. Yeah, and I do agree with that as well. And I'll offer just a slight defence of Lyndon Dykes on this as well. And that I managed, I actually meant to dig out the stats on this, but I didn't have time because I've got a job. I feel that Dykes won an awful lot. And again, this comes back to the problem with the balance in midfield. And that at no point, he was winning the ball with no one within 25 yards of him. And the performance against Serbia, for example, that he was huge in, was because we were brave and because we got in there and because we got in around him and gave him support in there. And again, looking at, I realise it's a struggle for options. I don't feel that there's a better physical centre forward. If we're going to play the system we are going to play, it perhaps leans into the idea that you're talking about, the sort of tactical and flexibility that we have at the moment. But if we're going to play like that, there needs to be someone to go and win things. And I think he's the guy that can go and win things for us. But it requires Gilmour, or it requires Jack to give McGinn and Armstrong the freedom, or McGinn and whoever it is that's going to play alongside it, or McGregor, to give them the freedom to get and support them, because particularly this game, it exposed it more than any of the other ones. And it was just, he had no support around him. Adams, again, I think the two of them could work as a pairing, but it just, last night wasn't the night.
They've had fleeting moments that suggest that they might link up well. That there was a point last night, I think reasonably early in the game, where Dykes won a header and then Adams had the first time shot that was actually like it was deflected wide and didn't get a corner.
Yeah.
But that was probably about it in terms of the two of them linking up. I was critical of Dykes. I was critical of Dykes at the time. And that was probably a bit harsh because ultimately I don't really see him as a target man, as in lump the ball to his head. Like I don't really think that's necessarily his strength. And if you are asking him to do that, as you say, you then need players buzzing around him to pick up his headers, because he was winning headers, which by the looks of things is what we were asking him to do. I don't necessarily think that's his strength. But the problem with Dykes is he's never been a goal scorer. Yep. So he isn't somebody that's going to score 1 in 3 for Scotland. That's just not going to happen. But I also don't necessarily see him as an ideal target man either. So, and that's kind of what we're asking him to do. So if he can't, if he isn't a target man and he isn't a goal scorer, then what is he? But that isn't necessarily Dyke's fault, because that's ultimately we were asking him to be a target man. And I think what was frustrating me again last night against Croatia more than anything else is that, and again, this isn't Dyke's fault, I almost felt like we were taking the easy option. And the easy option was, there's a big tall guy up front, we'll blutter it to his head.
Yeah.
And that I don't think that's ever going to get the best out of us, because I do actually think we now have reasonably decent technical footballers that probably, if you keep the ball on the deck, that's probably where we're at our strengths. So again, that isn't Dyke's fault. So I was maybe a bit harsh when I was being critical of him, but ultimately it didn't work.
I mean, that was driving me nuts last night as well, because the points in which we got the ball and played the ball, it was the sort of bursting run that McTominay made from centre-half, and again, just highlighting that's what he's there for and that's why he plays in that role. His defensive deficiencies, I think we're all well aware of at this point as well, and it's going to be a struggle, but because of the nation we are and because of the players we have available, you're going to have to make some sort of trade-off somewhere around the pitch. And if that's a trade-off we're going to make, that him getting forward, it was the 1-2, him busting at the box, I think it was Adams, or perhaps one of the centre forward, just slightly overhit the pass and just skidded past him as well. And it was things like that, the moments where we did actually go, do you know what, let's just play the game, let's play the ball down. And again, when you're looking at, it led to the frustration last night as well, when you're looking at, like, Luka Modric, is wonderfully conditioned as he is, as wonderful a footballer as he is, he's fucking 35 years old, make him run around, make him move around, make him chase things down and make him do things for his team, which he doesn't want to do. No one else in that, if we make them move around, then that's going to tire him out, which means he's going to not have the time to charge onto the edge of the box to find himself in 5 yards of space to clip one at the corner and keep the ball and move things around. And that's, I really feel, I totally agree. I felt like we didn't do that at any point last night in terms of, didn't do it nearly enough, and the points that we did, we looked like a threat and we looked like we were dangerous to them. And that's what the goal came from as well, which was just people getting into the box. It was causing a bit of chaos there and moving the ball, which gave McGregor the space to lash one in, which again, I know it was mentioned in the ITV4 coverage as well, particularly through McCoist, but McGregor's first touch with his left foot was absolutely sensational, just to pop it off his a lashed clearance onto his left foot, he just popped it onto his right to lump it into the corner. And as soon as the ball popped out, all I could think of was please let McGregor be there, because I don't trust anyone else to hit one in. But if McGregor's there, he'll put it in the corner. Just let him be there in that moment. And he was, and fair play, it was a smashing goal.
Well, no, it was. And I was going doolally. and my pal's gazebo. See, in terms of a half-time interval, were you surprised that we didn't change it? And do you think you would have changed something if we hadn't equalised? Because ultimately, other than the first 10 minutes, where I thought we pressed them and cajoled them and kind of looked like it was going to be a reasonably even game, other than the first 10 minutes in the first half and maybe the last 5 minutes of the first half, they never really got close to them. See, everything in between, everything sandwiched in between, they dictated everything. And I thought, right, we'll have to do something here. We'll have to change something, whether it's personnel, whether it's the system. And I suppose the fact that we've just equalised, maybe you think, right, well, actually, that's fine. We've got momentum here. We'll just leave as is, and maybe we can kick on. But really, like, right for the word go in the second half, there are a couple of one-on-ones that Marshall did well to save. And I'm not saying equalising was necessarily bad for us in terms of not changing something.
scoring goals is bad, actually.
But even when we equalised, I still thought we've been a real second best here. We've been a long way behind Croatia, and we still need to change something. Like I still didn't really feel it was working, and I was kind of surprised we didn't change anything at the start of the second half.
Yeah, I was quite surprised at that, certainly. I'm still not entirely sure what, and this is kind of throughout the tournament, I'm not entirely sure. Everyone else, I can see what they're bringing to the party. Stuart Armstrong, I'm still not entirely sure what he's bringing to a Scotland midfield. And for a guy that I think all of us, certainly at his time at Celtic, absolutely adored, thought he was going to be the guy for Scotland for the next few years. And the way in which Scotland played at the time, it always felt like he was going to offer something there. Now, I'm just not really... He certainly doesn't fit in a midfield three for us. He's not offering enough defensively. He's not offering enough offensively. And I kind of feel everyone performed to do exactly what they were asked to do. And that's... whether that's a coaching fault or that's just not really recognising what's going on there. But I do agree, when you were saying earlier about perhaps Fleck was the guy to be in there as well. But throughout the game, we just never felt that we were close to control in the midfield. Never felt that we were anywhere near that. And McGinn, you always keep on, because McGinn, obviously not in this tournament, but you always feel that McGinn is a goal threat. And we saw that as well with the long cross that came in from Robertson, which achingly, had he gone with his right, it's straight on goal or a penalty, one or the other. But he just lashes at it with his left because he's left-footed and that's what he's going to do. You always keep him on. McGregor's the guy that's going to link, is going to be sort of the glue in there as well. Armstrong, I'm just not totally sure what he was bringing there. And I do think, I was surprised at halftime as well, because it felt that we kind of got away with it more than anything else. The goal wasn't an indication of an extended period of pressure from us, and actually we've turned the game by we've imposed our game on the first 45 minutes in the second half. I kind of felt like, right, we got away with one, so we need to look at how we changed it in the second half. And it felt sluggish to do that. And that was something that's kind of, as you say, the England game will discount, but the first game and the third game, everything felt just a wee bit sluggish to react to what was going on in front of us. But again, it comes back to the idea of, can you be ruthless and just hook guys off? If that's the manager you are, then that's fine. If the squad respects that and understands that, then fine. But it's just not the way that Clark's manages today.
I mean, the thing about Armstrong, watching back the England game, I don't really remember, but the last 5 or 10 minutes of the England game, which is typical of somebody that falls into a hedge immediately after the game. But watching back the England game the day after, Armstrong attempting to dribble his way out of that stramash in the final couple of minutes. What the fuck are you up to?
I swear, I said to you yesterday, I swear I thought my heart was going to stop. Because by this point, I've watched 90 minutes of this game, my heart is already beating, like thumping out of my chest, and there's a stramash in the box. And you see Armstrong going in to come and collect it. And as soon as he goes and collects it, like, what the fuck are you doing? He's done it again. It's happened again, because all I wanted was the Stuart Armstrong redemption arc from the last time we played them felt like a great story in it. And then the fact that it was almost not a redemption, but actually he's learned fuck all and he's fucking done it again. I swear, honestly, I nearly fell off my seat. It was way too much for me at that moment in time.
And in terms of Armstrong, I'm starting to feel... So I don't watch a lot of live English football, right? But I think... in terms of what we are asking from him in a Scotland shirt and where we're playing him in a Scotland shirt, isn't where he thrives or what he wants to do or where he's best suited. And I am starting to feel a wee bit like, when it comes to Stuart Armstrong, a wee bit like Charlie Adam. So when I used to watch Charlie Adam on Match of the Day for Blackpool, he was involved in every single good thing that they did. And therefore, I presumed that Charlie Adam was exceptional. But actually, I was just watching him in like 250 seconds of Blackpool footage. And Armstrong is a wee bit like that for Southampton. So I'll watch Southampton match today. I'm like, fuck me. Armstrong is a brilliant footballer. And we could really build a team around him. And then I watch him for 90 minutes for Scotland. And again, he flatters to deceive. However, I do think that maybe down to we play a completely different system to Southampton and we don't have the position available to him where he needs to play and wants to play and where he can necessarily impress.
Yeah, fully agree with that. Well, I mean, I'm not entirely sure what how much we've actually spoken about the game there, more than anything else.
Nothing, but that's fine. Do you know what was the most disappointing aspect of yesterday? So Graham, you know me. I am not very good with computers or adding things to pictures, even to the degree that I have sent you pictures to add text to.
Yes.
So yesterday, so I'm on holiday this week, so I've got a wee bit of free time. Not much, but a wee bit. So I downloaded an app onto my phone where I could add text to pictures. And it cost me £2.79. And I'd used the picture of Sammy the Tammy getting kicked in the face by a gigantic swan. And the Sammy the Tammy was glorious failure. And the gigantic swan was Scotland. And I was primed and ready to go as soon as we qualified for the knockout stages. And this picture will never see the light of day. And it took me about 50 minutes and cost me £2.79.
Sean, I made 23 gold graphics. Got to use one of them. Got to use a single one of them. Yeah. I just realised earlier on I said we scored two goals. We didn't score one fucking goal.
I really scored one. I was going to pick you up. But
yeah, no.
But I'm glad you've noticed it yourself.
Yeah. No, I made 23 goal scorer graphic, goal scorer videos. Got to use one of them. Single one. I might just post them all.
That's the biggest negative of this tournament, isn't it? The lack of goal gifts that you can use and my big swan picture.
Yeah, 23 of them, 22 of which will never see the light of day. I might just throw them in the group chat just to prove that it was done. Just to highlight that I did do some work for this. Just I'll just go back to posting pictures of Jordi Tysa. I'm sure that'll be fine. Nonetheless, I think we'll round it off with that. Dundee's centre forward who couldn't fucking score and Swans battering animals that haven't really been defined. I think that's probably the high point.
He's a bear.
Is he?
Aye.
Are you sure? Like, again, this is something that's come up a few times. Well, like,
what else can he possibly be? He's not a dog.
Know.
He's not an otter. He's not a beaver. He's a bear.
He's a tammy, though.
A tammy isn't an animal.
Well, it's not, is it? Yes, it's a bear. But is he a... Why isn't he like Sammy the Bear? Because just because it doesn't rhyme. Why isn't he Brian the Bear? I don't know.
I don't know. It's a salient point, but
he's allegedly a bear, but I don't know if there's any clarity. I might tweet them further and ask for clarity in terms of what animal Sammy is. Is Sammy a bear? If anyone's listening, please send it into PO Box 4587 Motherwell, whatever a fucking PO box is. Right, well, this is really things that are at hand now. So thank you very much for your time today, Sean.
No, thank you.
We can all go back to just hoping England don't fucking win it.
Please.
Yep. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.